Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
MCH to Loosen ER Visitation by Michael Merlot. Medical Center Hospital Chief Nursing Officer Kristen Timmons said during a Thursday news briefing that MCH will open up some visitation for patients in the ER at 7 a.m. Monday. She said that currently MCH has been conducting an efficiency flow project and patients aren't having to spend much time in the ER waiting room. We're going to open up visitation for one visitor per patient in our ER now, she said. Timmons said that visitors will not be allowed in waiting rooms, so if a patient is waiting in the waiting room, the visitor will be asked to go back to their vehicle and will be called when allowed to enter. She added that people will have to sign a liability release before being able to visit ER patients. Anyone who is a COVID positive patient, they will not be allowed a visitor just because we want to make sure we're remaining very stringent in our COVID patients, she said, adding that persons under investigation will be allowed a visitor. All visitors will be screened and then will be assigned a wristband, she said, encouraging the public to bring their own masks if they decide to visit. She said other exceptions currently in place are still in place. MCH President and CEO Russell Tippin said that MCH has had 1,404 positive COVID-19 tests and 32 positive patients are in the hospital. Tippin said that 21 of those patients are on the 8 central isolation unit, 11 are in the critical care unit, with 5 on ventilators. He said that the patients include 5 from Buena Vida Nursing and Rehabilitation, 2 from Deering's Nursing and Rehabilitation, 1 from Siena Nursing Home, 1 from Focused Care at Odessa, 4 from the Winkler County Hospital, 1 from Monahans, 1 from Alpine, and 1 from Andrews. We're going to dismiss 5 of those today, he said, and 22 patients are pending. Odessa Regional Medical Center Chief Medical Officer Dr. Rohith Saravanan said ORMC has conducted 2,973 tests, 2,542 are negative, 431 have been positive, and no tests are pending. We do have a reasonably good supply of CFID PCR test kits. So for all of our inpatients, for all of our testing being done in the hospital, we're doing all of those on the PCR machine, he said, rather than sending any tests out. 10 patients are in the hospital, he said. 9 are on the ICU, with 2 on ventilators, and 1 is on a different floor. 7 of the patients are local. 2 are from Big Spring, and 1 is from Reeves County. Saravanan spoke on the local numbers and said that while the Texas positivity rate is at 7.95%, Ector County's positive rate is about doubling that number. It's important for us to keep in mind that this disease is still very much in our community, and as we start to make changes in our community, we have to be careful to watch this rate and make sure it doesn't climb too fast. The Ector County Health Department website detailed that while there have been 4,433 total positive cases in the county, 2,940 are confirmed positives, 1,493 are probable positives, and 639 cases are listed as active. The website lists the county positivity rate at 17.8%, with 78 Ector County resident deaths and 3,716 people recovered from the virus. The website also detailed that 323 tests are currently pending. ECISD reopening plan gets national notice. by Ruth Campbell. Ector County ISD has received national notice as one of five school reopening plans that can be used as models for the rest of the country. In a media call Wednesday, Superintendent Scott Murray said the AASA, a national school superintendents organization, and Transcend recognized ECISD. Along with ECISD, information from Transcend includes Cleveland Metropolitan School District, DeSoto Independent School District, Lindsay Unified School District, and Miami-Dade Public Schools. Led by Deputy Superintendent Stephanie Howard, Murray noted that a task force made up of teachers, administrators, students, parents, central office employees, and others worked on the reopening plan for months. AASA and Transcend looked at school opening plans nationwide and identified five that they considered innovative and that would help other schools across the nation in having a healthy opening, Murray said. And ours was selected to be one of the five. It was shared with school districts all over the United States as a premier opening of schools plan. So I want to commend the entire task force. We want them to be recognized and validated for their work. He added that he has a colleague in Georgia and noticed that the colleague's school opening plan for their system of about 180,000 students was very similar to our plan, and they had used some of our components to drive the work in their organization. So we are happy to share the really good work that was done in ECISD with school districts from across the country. And we appreciate AASA as well as Transcend for recognizing the good work happening in Ector County ISD for the students we serve. On the subject of football or Friday Night Lights, the first games will not be until September 24th and 25th. Our football teams are preparing, the band is preparing, our cheerleaders and dancers, but also the folks who work in the concession stands. Our security officers are preparing, our staff members who support that experience, our athletic teams, our athletic department is busy preparing for a wonderful opportunity for our students, Murray said. The University Interscholastic League, UIL, has put rules in place for everyone involved, from fans to players, band members, and cheerleaders, he added. While the games are open to the public, the district will only seat about 30% of the normal capacity in the stadiums to keep everybody safe, Murray said. This year, all of our fans are required to wear a face covering at all times. We will have those available at the gates when people enter, but we encourage all of our fans to wear a face covering as they enter the game. The high schools are each selling face coverings in their team colors, he added. We encourage our fans to visit one of the high schools and pick up one of those face coverings. But again, they'll be required throughout the game this year. We also are requiring social distancing, so a minimum of 6 feet apart. You can certainly sit with your family group, but families must be at least 6 feet or more apart. We are partitioning off our stands and will make sure that we make those areas easily identifiable to our fans. We will be providing concessions this year, but in a modified format, as we must maintain social distancing during half times and between the quarters of our games. Our bands, cheerleaders, and dancers will be performing, as well as our athletes will be on the field. Things will look a little bit different for them. Face coverings will be required for those individuals, with the exception of the time that they are actually in performance mode. When a football play is happening, the players do not have to wear a face covering. But as soon as that play is over, they are required to put a face covering on. Our cheerleaders, when they are actually cheering, they don't have to wear a face covering. But the times when they are not participating in a cheer, they are required to wear a mask. The same with our band and dancers. Whenever they are in performance mode, they are not required to wear a face covering, but as soon as their performance is over, they must recover their faces, Murray said. All fans, staff members, and students attending the game must wear face coverings. We will do everything we can to make sure the fans, students, athletes, and musicians are safe in that environment. Games will also be broadcast on local TV and radio stations. For more information, people may visit the ECISD website. PBAF gives $1.3 million in grants. Midland. Permian Basin Area Foundation has awarded $1,293,000 to nonprofit organizations serving West Texans during its delayed spring grant cycle. Last March, PBAF Grants Committee and Board of Governors decided to defer the spring grant cycle until late summer and instead began funding emergency grants due to the immediate needs presented by the COVID-19 pandemic. The competitive grants were awarded in early September and were made to the following organizations: Addie's Hope, Ballroom Marfa, Communities in Schools Permian Basin, Education Partnership of the Permian Basin, Girl Scouts of the Desert Southwest, Hillcrest School, Humanities Texas, Junior Achievement of Permian Basin, Marathon Public Library, Marfa Live Arts, Martin County Convent, Medical Center Health Systems Foundation, Midland Charter Academy School PTO, Midland Young Life, Museum of the Southwest, New Horizons Ranch and Center Incorporated, Nonprofit Management Center, Permia Care, Pink the Basin, Prevent Blindness Texas, Recording Library of West Texas, Rope for Youth, Samaritan Counseling Center of West Texas, Senior Life Midland, South Plains Rural Health Services, Terrell County ISD, Texas Water Trade, the Cody Stevens Foundation, and West Texas Food Bank. As a part of these competitive grant awards, the foundation awarded $329,000 to 11 organizations from the Dolly Ruth Neal Education Fund. The purpose of this fund is to provide education opportunities for women across West Texas with an emphasis on empowering single mothers to become self-sufficient. It is unfortunate we were unable to have our usual press conference to announce these grants, Grants Administrator Megan Harris said in a news release. We look forward to the day when we can gather together and celebrate these nonprofit organizations and the wonderful work they are doing in our communities. The current fall grant cycle is open and proceeding as scheduled. The fall application will close October 1st. Visit www.pbaf.org to review application requirements and to apply. Obituaries and death notices for Friday, September 11th. Annette Ruth Burns Wilkerson. Annette Ruth Burns Wilkerson passed away September 8th at home in Odessa. Funeral services were held Friday, September 11th at Mission Dorado Baptist Church with the Reverends Robert L. Bratcher and Del Travenstedt officiating. Burial followed at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Annette was born August 15th, 1937 in Bakersfield, California to Ivan and Florette Burns. She married Bill Wilkerson in 1955 in White Deer, Texas. Annette is preceded in death by her parents, Ivan and Florette Burns, a brother, Jackie Burns, a special aunt and uncle, Melba and Wes Langham, and special sisters-in-law and husbands, Donna and Ralph, Polly, and Jean and Bob McKernan. She is survived by her husband of 65 years, Bill, son Mitchell and wife Audrey of Dallas, daughter Stacy French and husband Steve of Fort Worth, sister Paulette Smith of White Deer, three grandchildren, a sister-in-law, Barbara Burns Sides of Amarillo. Arrangements are entrusted to Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home. To send condolences to the family, please sign her guest book at www.sunsetodessa.com. Clarence Neil Johnson. Clarence Neil Johnson passed away at his residence September 4th in Odessa at the age of 66. Neil was born April 29, 1954, in Odessa, to Billy Mangan Holiday and Clarence Bucky Johnson. He is survived by his children, Marshall Neil Johnson and wife Shakritha of Odessa, and Eric Balcazar and husband Michael of Odessa. He is also survived by eight grandchildren, sisters Vicki Holiday of Midland, Serena Freeland and husband Paul of Odessa, Sherry McCrary and husband Bruce of Odessa. He was preceded in death by his parents, Marshall and Billy Mangan Holiday of Odessa, and Clarence Bucky Johnson of Brownwood. A celebration of life is pending further notice. In lieu of flowers, please consider donations to Meals on Wheels or the charity of your choice. Arrangements by Odessa Funeral Home. George C. Kemper. George Kemper, 55, of Odessa, passed away September 6th in Odessa. A funeral mass was celebrated Friday morning, September 11th, at St. Elizabeth Ann Seton Catholic Church with Father Timothy Hader officiating. Burial followed at a private family cemetery. Arrangements are by Martinez Funeral Home. George was born in Odessa to George and Rowena Kemper, October 3rd, 1964. He is preceded in death by his parents, grandparents, aunts, and uncles. George is survived by three brothers and two sisters, and their children and grandchildren. Death notices. Ernest Sosa Alvarado. Ernest Sosa Alvarado, 74, of Odessa, died Wednesday, September 2nd. A memorial service will be held at 1 p.m. September 14th at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home, with Minister Obed Hernandez officiating. Rene Romero, 49, of Odessa, died Friday, August 28th, in Mexico. A memorial service was held September 11th at St. Stephen's Catholic Church in Midland. Arrangements by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Lyndon Jack Donahue, 60, of Odessa, died Wednesday, August 12th. A memorial service will be held at 1 p.m. September 19th at Emmanuel Baptist Church in Odessa. Arrangements are by American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory of Midland. Lorenzo Aguilar Molinar, 84, of Odessa, died Monday, September 7th. Services will be scheduled at a later date. Arrangements are by Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home of Midland. Velma Maureen Shavers Roach, 84, of Odessa, died Tuesday, September 8th. A funeral service will be held at 1 p.m. Tuesday, September 15th at Acres West Funeral Chapel. Burial will follow at Ector County Cemetery.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Sunday, September 6th, 2020.
Mrs. K, reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Saturday, September 5th, 2020, page 2, Culture. Benefiting Keep Midland Beautiful, Trio of Gardens. The 24th annual Trio of Gardens is 1 to 4 p.m. Sunday. The event, a tour of three private gardens, benefits Keep Midland Beautiful and will provide visitors with the opportunity to talk to Permian Basin Master Gardeners about the best practices for gardening in West Texas and receive resources to help with planning a garden. This year's gardens are at the homes of Kay Arrow, 2514 Sinclair Avenue, Mary and Jack Blake, 1005 North D Street, and Linda and Autry Stevens, 2408 Bluebird Lane. Trio of Gardens is presented by Faskin Oil and Ranch Limited, Concho Resources, and Carmen and Billy Bryant. Advance tickets are $12 and may be purchased at www.keepmidlandbeautiful.org or by texting TRIO2020 TRIO2020 to 44321. Tickets may be purchased the day of the event at garden locations for $15 each. Ticket purchasers are eligible to win a $500 gift certificate to Aldridge Gardens. For more information, visit www.keepmidlandbeautiful.org. Courtesy photos. 1005 North D Street, home of Mary and Jack Blake. The cozy seating areas on both sides of the fireplace are just a couple of the features of this garden. Engulfed by impressive trees, this warm and inviting landscape is perfect for entertaining or for a quiet evening with family. A sparkling fountain seems to be at center stage in this garden, but the variety of plants and colors are really the star of the show. Beautiful beds are brimming with drought-tolerant plants and topicals, including some impressive plumbago and vinca that have had time to mature and fill in. An outdoor kitchen will keep the adults busy while the kids play on the slide and playground equipment. 2514 Sinclair Avenue, home of Kay Arrow. Permian Master Gardeners for many years have been advising the theory of a third, a third, a third, and this landscape is a perfect example. The backyard is one-third hardscape, one-third plants, and one-third turf to show a perfect balance. The layers of trees, drought-tolerant plants, and ferns display a well-thought-out garden. Whimsical statues and birdhouses dot the landscape, and the covered patio shows seating and dining areas perfect for bird watching. Bird of paradise and more surround the dry riverbed path. 2408 Bluebird Lane, home of Linda and Autry Stevens. Design was top of mind when this landscape was created, with the artwork and much more to admire. Freshly reworked, this extraordinary landscape has an emphasis on being drought-tolerant and features paths that lead to a beautiful pool and a pond with its own boathouse. A waterfall offers relaxation, and bougainvillea is surrounded by a variety of trees. There are two outdoor kitchen areas and a huge pirate ship playground for kids and a putting green for the golfers. Hello, this is Kay reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Sunday, September 6th, 2020. Section 5B, Viewpoints. Communities are counting on the 2020 census. In 1790, the United States endeavored to complete a monumental task, counting every person living within its borders, about 3.9 million people. In 2020, we expect to count well over 330 million people. The census this year is just as important as the first count, taken in 1790, was, especially for Texans. Our founders enshrined in the Constitution the practice of taking a census by mandating that every person in the United States be counted every 10 years. Taking an accurate and timely census is not only our constitutional duty, it is a responsibility that will shape our communities and state for the next decade. Population data gathered by the U.S. Census Bureau determines how many seats in the House of Representatives are allocated to each state, as well as the number of Electoral College votes for presidential elections. It informs how legislative lines are drawn and determines how federal funding is allocated. The count even factors into decisions made by businesses and nonprofit organizations. Since 2010, our state has grown exponentially, making it imperative for every Texan to respond to the 2020 census and ensure that their households are accurately accounted for. Not only does Texas stand to gain up to 3 new congressional seats after the 2020 census, a report on the impact of the census by George Washington University estimates that an undercount of only 1% in Texas could result in the loss of at least $300 million a year in federal funding for our state over the next decade. Hundreds of federal programs depend on a population-driven formula that is informed by the census. In fact, over the 2016 fiscal year, the 10 largest census-guided programs distributed nearly $44 billion to Texas, and that number is likely to increase in the coming years. This affects Medicare, Medicaid, the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, SNAP, National School Lunch Program, highway planning and construction, school funding, and more. As we continue to tackle the challenges associated with COVID-19, it's more critical than ever that our hospitals and schools have access to all potential resources at their disposal. Texas is home to a diverse population of communities of all sizes. With approximately 25% of our state's population, including those in our rural communities, currently residing in hard-to-count areas, which puts our state at an increased risk of being undercounted. In fact, a Census Bureau study estimated that Texas undercounted its total population by 0.97% in the 2010 census. We cannot afford to undercount again in the 2020 census. The good news is that the Census Bureau has been working diligently over the last 10 years to ensure that the 2020 census is the easiest, most user-friendly census yet. In fact, this is the first year that individuals can fill out and respond to their census questionnaire online. You can respond to the census request easily and securely by visiting 2020census.gov, that's 2020census.gov, calling 844-330-2020. That's 844-330-2020, or mailing back the paper questionnaire that was sent to your home. At last count, only 52.8% of the 11th District of Texas had self-responded to the census. We must get this number to 100%. The deadline to respond is September 30th. Please help our communities and Texas be accurately represented and respond to the 2020 census today. Mike Conaway represents Texas 11th Congressional District. Mike Conaway, Texas 11th Congressional District. To Lee or not to Lee? Commentary. It's hard to watch some devalue the equality of a choice, by Sarah Hale. Over the last couple of years, I have learned a lot about the school district, its relationship with the city, and players on both sides of the line. Though a vision as a community is important, I feel we must ask if those agendas are in the best interests of our future. Midland has had a hard run for a good solid year now, a rushed bond proposal, an economic downturn, a pandemic, and now a rushed name change. It's like going to war on an already bloodied battlefield. Why? Why must we do everything the hard way? Have we learned nothing from the nasty? Anytime a few feel they rule all, there will be division. For those who buck the agenda, hold on to your seats. That road will be bumpy. If you ask questions or have an opposing opinion, you're racist, you're unchristian, you're divisive, you hate kids and teachers, and you most certainly should not have a say. As a CASA volunteer, I work like crazy to ensure our kiddos have a voice in this world. For my family and friends, I fight daily to protect those rights as well. If we empower children to have a voice, we should also value the voice of the community and majority. It is our responsibility and obligation to understand that our feelings and emotions do not get to rule or dictate what others believe or choose. My love and care for their space in this world does not expire when we may disagree. As I said on the naming committee, I am filled with thoughts. Nothing about this is easy. In the end, many will be unhappy no matter what is chosen, and the agendas are alive and well. For me, there are two issues. First, a nationwide concern for racial injustice. Second, a name change. Using racism as a tool to effect the name change is damning on many fronts. Our teachers and students are yet again the victims of the chaos. A community that once sought commonality now picks apart others to get their way. Midland Lee is not an angry, bad, divisive school, and the illusion of such has left more questions than answers. Breakers are a dime a dozen. Focus on the builders. Interestingly enough, many who are rapidly pushing this change were the same rushing a bond. They watched firsthand as it tore us all apart. Yet here we are. I can't tell if people are angrier over the name or the lack of care for their voice yet again. I have certainly learned to pay very close attention to our elected officials. I will support anyone running against those who failed to speak or vote with their districts. It is wrong, and they must go. If I expect a united front from our board, I must offer the same on the naming committee. It is hard for me to sit in a room that is questioning the equality of a name, but devaluing the equality of a choice. We all have a choice, and I will always vote for the majority if I am chosen to speak for them. Various forms of Midland Lee were by far the majority in every poll, survey, and discussion reviewed. If we don't value a majority, I fear the direction our community is heading. As we hurdle over the injustices in the naming committee and solicited opinions from our board president, Rick Davis, rushed and emotional reactions, and a hierarchy of I know bests, I encourage everyone to remember the value of community and passionately defend the rights of others to have a say, even if it is not fitting of our feelings or an agenda. In the middle of two heated extremes lies a majority of people who want resolution. Robert E. is no longer part of our story, and that is one thing we can agree on. Keeping the Lee name is the wrong thing to do. It is my honor to have been appointed to the Citizens Committee for renaming Robert E. Lee High School. I am politically conservative, a person of deep faith, middle-aged, and white. I say that because it hasn't always been easy or natural for me to be sensitive to issues of race. Whether we want it to be or not, the renaming of Robert E. Lee High School is, at its very core, a racial issue. I don't believe that we are dealing with the same kind of overt racial attitudes that led to the naming of Lee High School in the first place. I don't believe that people who want to keep the Lee name are racists. However, I do think it is wishful thinking to retain any form of the Lee name and believe that we haven't communicated something powerfully racial to ourselves and to the world. This much should be perfectly clear. Whatever we believe about the man himself, Robert E. Lee and icons of the Confederacy, such as the Confederate flag, rebels, and the song Dixie, are not quaint reminders of the antebellum South. Instead, they have become symbols of the brutality and cruelty of slavery and the Jim Crow era. We cannot separate these icons from this reality. Words and symbols are powerful. They mean something. We do not have the option to determine what a symbol means. Symbols are messages that communicate something specific. I was in Brazil once, and I gave a friend of mine the okay sign with my hand. He turned pale and grabbed my hand and said, "That is one of the most vulgar things you can do here." It did not matter that I didn't mean to say something offensive. It did not matter that, in my mind, I was communicating approval. It did not matter that for my entire life, the okay sign meant something positive. What mattered is what that symbol meant in that place and for that time. Words and symbols mean what they mean in their place and time. Let's agree that, regardless of what we mean by it, for most people, Lee and the symbols of the Confederacy represent racism and slavery. Even if we don't mean them that way, we can't change reality, no matter how badly we want to. More to the heart and hurt of the matter, for many of our citizens of color, those symbols perpetuate the message of the past, even if we don't mean them to. The only reason we have been asked to suggest possibilities for renaming this school is because the name Lee symbolizes something we don't want to be part of anymore. Some have said that we should listen to our students for this decision. While I'm glad that we have students on our committee who are part of this conversation, and their input is important, I will point out that a student vote helped get us in this mess in 1960. Adults have the benefit of the perspective of time. This should be an adult decision. Many of the adults I know who are in favor of a complete name change didn't have any problem with it when they were teenagers. I don't know anyone who has matured in the opposite direction. Finally, I want to point out that sometimes doing the right thing means going against the majority opinion. The Voting Rights Act of 1964 would not have passed through a national vote. It took the courage and sacrifice of a few to lead the nation to the right conclusion. I think the easy thing would be to keep some form of the name Lee. I think most of those associated with Midland Lee would vote in favor of keeping the name. My guess is that Midland Lee will be the highest-ranked suggestion coming out of this committee. I believe the committee has enough votes to present the school board with naming options that will only include some version of the name Lee. But I don't think keeping the Lee name is the right thing to do. White people who want to keep things the same have the power of the majority. That doesn't mean we should use it. I say white people because if you pay attention, the majority of those who are asking us to change it are people of color. Keeping any form of the name Lee isn't a compromise, it's a cram down. We have the chance to do something we will be proud of for generations. This issue won't go away with half measures. We have the chance to do something once and for all to put this behind us. That is why my nomination for the name was anything that doesn't include the name Lee. What can you do? Call, text, or email your school board representative and tell them you are supporting them to courageously lead Midland into a new future. Tell them we want to send a different message to the world than we did 60 years ago. Dozens of communities have found a way through this. Let's not be one of the last cities in America to come to our senses. We are better than that. Photo. Midland firefighters from Station 8 are joined by the crew from Station 9 on September 3rd, 2018, for a meal delivered by Midland Olive Garden. Olive Garden restaurants across the country deliver meals to first responders on Labor Day as a way to say thank you. Another photo, U.S. Representative Mike Conaway speaks on September 4th, 2017, at the Labor Day celebration in Odessa.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Sunday, September 6th, 2020. Letters to the Editor. Carrasco is dedicated and is a strong leader. I've had the pleasure of knowing Adrian Carrasco for over 30 years. Adrian worked for me through the part-time and work-study program at Midland College. I was impressed with Adrian's work ethic as a young college student, as he never missed work. Adrian has always been on the move to do great things in his life. He has been successful in life. He has been there for me as I have been there for him. Adrian is running for the MC Board Place 7 to help students and help Midland College be even greater. We need his ideas and business know-how on the board at Midland College. He is dedicated and a strong leader. Adrian and the Carrasco family have and will continue to do great things for Midland College. A vote for Adrian Carrasco for Midland College Board of Trustees Place 7 is a positive one for Midland College and its future. Richard Yanez. Carrasco has ambition, work ethic, MC needs. I have known Adrian for over 30 years. Knowing his family and upbringing, you knew Adrian was going to be a successful person in life. His years at Midland College early on helped form him into the leader he is today. He has been a business owner in the oil and gas industry for 10 years and currently owns Premier Energy Services. To me, more importantly, his commitment and dedication to his family, friends, and this community make him a great selection. He has the drive, ambition, and work ethic needed for the future of Midland College. In the end, he truly cares deeply about Midland College, and with him on the MC Board of Trustees, he will ensure MC stays at the top. Please vote Carrasco for Place 7. Clint Kidd.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Saturday, September 5th, 2020. Start with trust. Choosing the Right Driver's Ed Course by Heather Massey, Regional Director of the Better Business Bureau in the Permian Basin. Students are looking for a sense of normalcy as they navigate the school year during COVID-19. Students in driver's ed are no exception. While some Texas driving schools are holding classes in person, many are encouraging students to pursue online or parent-taught courses to limit exposure among students. Learning to drive is a big moment in your teenager's life, as well as a big responsibility. Choose the right driver's education program for your student with these tips from your Better Business Bureau. No state requirements. The state of Texas requires drivers under 18 to complete a driver's education course before obtaining a license. Students are required to complete 6 hours of classroom instruction using the concurrent method or 32 hours using the block method. You can find requirements for getting your license at dps.texas.gov. Determine type of instruction. During COVID-19, you may want to consider online courses or parent-taught options. When searching for a driving school, compare online classes and parent-taught programs to see which ones fit your schedule and budget. If you decide to proceed with in-person classes, call the driving school to see what safety precautions are in place. Look for quality. When looking for a driving school, consider checking to see if the instructors are properly credentialed with the American Driver and Traffic Safety Education Association, ADTSEA. You can check the Texas Department of Licensing and Regulation at www.tdlr.gov www.texas.gov for instructors in your area, as well as your local AAA club for recommendations. Be sure to check BBB.org as well to view business profiles of local driving schools. Check policies. Ask if you must sign a contract and if payments need to be made in full at the beginning or on a weekly basis. Find out what policies are in place for making up missed classes or exams. Visit us at BBB.org for more tips on finding the driving school that's right for you and your student driver.
Health and wellness. Skin cancer is the most common type of cancer in U.S. Dr. Michael Caglia, Midland Health. Living in Midland, you always hear that there is nothing like a West Texas sunset, which is very true. Well, there is also nothing like the UV rays from that same sun. Skin cancer is the most common type of cancer in the United States, with 1 in 5 Americans developing skin cancer. The most common type is basal cell carcinoma. Every day, nearly 20 Americans die from skin cancer. The vast majority of these are melanoma skin cancers. Unfortunately, we all love to be outside and in the sun, but exposure to natural and artificial UV light is a risk factor for all skin cancers. Even one blistering sunburn at a young age can almost double that person's chance of developing melanoma. People who are fair-skinned, have blonde or red hair, and a history of excessive sun exposure and tanning bed use are all risk factors for skin cancers. The best way to prevent skin cancers is to completely avoid direct sunlight from the hours of 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., because that is almost impossible if you have to be in the sun during this prime UV time. Wear UV-blocking clothing or sunblock with a sun protection factor, SPF, of 30 or greater. Reapply every couple of hours and after swimming or sweating. Because children with a history of sunburns greatly increases their risk of developing melanoma, it is important to protect children from the sun. I recommend no direct sunlight for extended periods of time before the age of 2. I encourage everyone to perform regular self-exam skin checks, looking for changes in shape, size, and color of moles. The appearance of a new growth or sore that does not heal, or anything changing, itching, or bleeding. It is important for individuals with a family history of skin cancers to be examined by a board-certified dermatologist. Let's all keep enjoying that West Texas sun. Just wear sunscreen. Dr. Michael Caglia is with Basin Dermatology.
To Your Good Health by Dr. Keith Roach. Hemorrhoid cream under your eyes. Dear Dr. Roach, is it safe to use hemorrhoid cream under your eyes as 3 actresses on TV said they do? Answer. Hemorrhoid creams are made with petrolatum, mineral oil, and a vasoconstrictor, such as phenylephrine. Some contain hydrocortisone. The manufacturer of Preparation H does not recommend using its products under the eyes, and I don't either. Vasoconstrictors may temporarily make the skin feel tighter as the blood vessels constrict, but this is doing nothing to help you in the long term. Hydrocortisone should not be applied to the face for prolonged periods, as it can permanently thin the skin on your face. Petrolatum and mineral oil can block pores and predispose to acne. I recommend using only products designed for the face, on the face.
Dealing with ex-girlfriends causes man consternation. Dear Abby for Friday, September 11th. Dear Abby, what is acceptable after a breakup occurs? Several years ago, I reached out to an ex-girlfriend. We had dated for 6 months, but she broke up with me to take a job in another state. A year later, I heard through mutual friends that she had recently moved back. I didn't call or text, but I did send an email asking how she was doing and if she'd like to talk. She completely freaked out. She threatened to get a restraining order and told many of our mutual friends that I had been stalking her for a year. From that experience, I learned never to contact an ex-girlfriend if they initiate the breakup. Fast forward. I recently ran into another ex-girlfriend who initiated the breakup. She told me that for an entire year after that breakup, she hoped I would call her, and when I didn't, it proved I had never loved her. Abby, I feel like I can't win. It's similar to how some women say that they won't let a guy kiss them unless they ask first. And others say if a guy asks, he's a wimp and they would refuse. As a man, I feel like I'm in an impossible position. No matter what I do, half the women on the planet will either view it as too aggressive or too passive. Help. Confounded in Oregon. Dear Confounded, welcome to reality. Except that no matter what you do, you can't please everyone. If the only contact you had with that first ex-girlfriend was one email after her return to your city, then she was either grandstanding to get attention or it was a symptom of emotional instability. As to your second ex, men with self-esteem rarely call back after being rejected because once is enough. Please don't let those two dolls sour you on all women. As you know, the Me Too movement has highlighted the importance of consent. Asking a woman before you make a move is always prudent. Dear Abby, I have struggled with my weight for years. My husband doesn't eat sweets, but we have a friend who insists on dropping off trays of dozens of cupcakes, candies, cookies, etc. I appreciate the time, money, and effort, but I'm finally on an eating program that's working for me. I told her nicely that while I appreciate her gesture, I can't be trusted alone with such goodies, so please share them with folks who have better self-control. Well, she swore at me and told me to lose her number. To say the least, I was shocked. Abby, I was gentle and as appreciative as I could be. I explained that I have a problem, and I'm the only one here who indulges in such foods. Was I wrong? What gives? I would donate them, but since I have a problem with sweets, I prefer not to have them in my house. Sweet love, hate in New Jersey. Dear Sweet, you did nothing wrong. You did yourself an important favor. That woman is not only not your friend, but she is also someone who cares nothing about your health and well-being. She is a saboteur with a vested interest in keeping you heavy. I admire your determination to take a stand on behalf of your eating program and your health. It took courage, and I applaud you for doing it. Sadly, too many people are afraid to do what you did.
Jacqueline Bigger Stars by Madeline Aslan. Note, Bigger Stars is based on the degree of your sun at birth. The sign name is simply a label that astrologers put on a set of degrees for convenience. For best results, readers should refer to the dates following each sign. A baby born today has a sun in Virgo and a moon in Gemini until 4:23 a.m., when the moon enters Cancer. Happy birthday for Friday, September 11, 2020. Free-spirited, nurturing, and at the same time dramatic, you delight in shocking others. This year is no exception as you make several surprising life decisions. You strike out on a new path. If single, your judgment of others allows you not to commit this year. You casually date. If attached, after some trials, Cupid will smile on one of the happiest years you have ever known. Pisces never bores you. The stars show the kind of day you'll have. 5 dynamic, 4 positive, 3 average, 2 so-so, 1 difficult. Aries, March 21 through April 19, 3 stars. Repairs and cleaning around your home require attention. A loved one would appreciate a treat or unusual gift you created. Your artistic skill peaks now. Your spiritual connection with the land deepens. Tonight, answers to a dilemma comes as a result of the centered feeling. Taurus, April 20 through May 20, 4 stars. You're emotionally tied to your work and want a job you believe in. Today, friendships with coworkers leads to new financial opportunities. Interact with others as much as you can. The results will be amazing. Tonight, a neighbor calls on you for help. Gemini, May 21 through June 20, 3 stars. You like to analyze financial situations and learn more about your profession to step up your earning power. Old debts or responsibilities draw on your resources now. Draw upon your brilliant analysis to resolve this. Tonight, reach out to an elderly family member. Cancer, June 21 through July 22, 5 stars. Always tender and sensitive, The crab feels the need to be protected from stresses and demanding individuals. Today, you receive a great deal of attention unexpectedly. Harmony returns, and your cherished beliefs are supported. Tonight, a huge sigh of relief. Leo, July 23 through August 22. 5 stars. Seclusion will help you heal and get centered today. You experience a pleasant sense of aloneness. Appreciate the advantages of privacy and cherish the quiet times. Kindnesses you perform warm you with an inner glow. Tonight, allow yourself to completely relax. Virgo, August 23 through September 22. 4 stars. Music and color bring pleasure today. Select a new picture or art object for your office. Plan something special near your birthday. Team spirit is strong, and you can enlist the help of associates in realizing goals. Tonight, promote what is meaningful to you. Libra, September 23 through October 22. 4 stars. Much will be expected of you today. Steady effort and patience eventually lead to success. Don't rely on quick solutions. Your innate acting ability and flamboyance should be expressed in your conversations and mail for best results. Tonight, use humor to cope with forceful people. Scorpio, October 23 through November 21, 4 stars. Don't adhere too closely to old habits and ideas now. New information brings a different viewpoint to the fore. You will make fresh plans regarding your career. Business travel, if you can manage it, would be very productive. Tonight, strike out into unknown territory. Sagittarius, November 22 through December 21, 3 stars. Today is perfect for selling and promotion, as well as study and negotiation. Greater kindness comes from influential people and smooths over age gap differences. Coping with responsibilities now becomes second nature to you. Tonight, allow extra time if traveling. Capricorn, December 22 through January 19. 3 stars. You get along well with others today. You can fit in just about anywhere. A legal matter comes to your attention. You comprehend the nuances of the situation, but it's difficult to go with the flow. Tonight, be careful that others don't manipulate your feelings. Aquarius, January 20 through February 18. 3 stars. It's a service day. You're the one others go to for help. Do what you can, but don't deny your own needs. Attend to details related to your health. Make that specialist appointment that you've been putting off. Tonight, you have second thoughts. Pisces, February 19 through March 20. 3 stars. Today brings new opportunities, especially related to a creative endeavor or romance. It could mean the beginning of something new or the end of something that's no longer viable. You are in for some pleasant surprises. Tonight, go with the flow. Born today, Ryder O. Henry, 1862, Ryder D. H. Lawrence, 1885, rapper Ludacris, 1977.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.